Location, location, location. We've always heard that when it comes to anywhere that your retail storefront is going to be. It really is all about that location, and you need experts to help you find that perfect place. Nora Walsh, our guest today, moved from the suburbs of Chicago to attend the business school at Drake University and graduated with an integrated marketing communications and direct and interactive marketing major and information systems minor. Her family background in commercial real estate in the Des Moines and Chicagoland area spiked her interest in the industry at a young age and gave her the enthusiasm for real estate that she has today. After working actively for 2 years in residential property management, Nora fell in love with Iowa and decided to make the transition to become an active Iowa realtor and joined Iowa Commercial Real Estate Association, International Council of Shopping Centers, Iowa Restaurant Association, and Commercial Real Estate Women of Iowa shortly thereafter. She joined the SVN Create team in 2018 and hopes to bring a strategic yet personable approach to the commercial buying and selling process. Nora, welcome to Northgate Cafe.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yes, absolutely. I have wanted to have you here for a bit because, as you and I both know, our paths keep crossing. Mm-hmm. As I'm helping businesses with their branding, and whether that be a restaurant or other ones, and we're doing their interior design and their spaces. It's like, hey, let me hook you up with my girl, Nora.
Mm-hmm. It's a perfect fit, yeah.
You've done the same for me. It's been awesome. And so, you know, in that bio, I said a lot of words, but let's hear the real story. Like, what got you excited about commercial real estate?
Yeah, well, it definitely wasn't a straight line. I graduated from Drake University, as you mentioned, with a marketing focus, and I actually thought I was just going to be in a marketing firm. Once I graduated, I started kind of really visualizing my career, and I realized I didn't want to be sitting at a desk all day on a computer all the time. I wanted some interaction. So it was initially my dad, who is in the commercial real estate field as well, on the landlord representation side, investor side, and he suggested property management. So I actually started off in a 261-unit apartment complex doing property management. Did that for 2 years, kind of worked my way up, and definitely you definitely get burnt out, especially on the residential side. It was really, really good learning experience. I got to learn the back end of everything, all the financials, rent roll, all that good stuff, which is really, really useful in my career now. So it was a really good base platform. But ultimately, you know, like I mentioned, my dad's involved with commercial real estate, and he actually has some properties here in Iowa. So he'd always be asking me, you know, hey, what do you think people your age enjoy? Go check this spot out. This is a new location. So I was always kind of keeping an eye out for that, giving him ideas, letting him know what I thought. So I didn't initially realize that that was going to be my interest. But once I got involved with the commercial real estate side of things, we had an investor that came in, acquired the property. So I got pretty involved with that process, really saw the back end. And somewhere just kind of in those couple months when I was feeling burnt out and wanted a change of pace, I decided I was going to go for my license. So I went, I got my license, started studying, and just kind of bopping around at all the local commercial real estate agencies and just kind of getting an idea of how everyone else started, what tips they had, because I've never been, nor did I ever anticipate on being a 1099 employee. You know, I never thought I'd be sales, which I still don't fully consider myself sales, you know, probably just because I enjoy it. But it was completely a new endeavor for me. So I asked a lot of questions and ultimately ended up with my business partner that I'm still with today. So almost, let's say, four years later. So,
and that is with?
So initially it started off as CRC Iowa, and then we rebranded after a year to SVN. So SVN is an international company. It's a franchise. So we did buy into the franchise. So our specific branch is SVN Create. Each one operates under a different name since it is a franchise. But we're all under the SVN flagship. So they're very collaborative. We're always reaching out to people from the other states, and they're really big on having a focus, a specialty. So a majority of what I do, as you know, is retail, restaurants. That's kind of my focus area. In an area like Des Moines, as kind of a smaller, you know, a tertiary market, You don't have as much specialization. Some people do end up just kind of gravitating towards one sector, but everyone, for the most part, a lot of people kind of try to be a jack of all trades. That's not really what we're like. So in our office, we have, you know, a seniors housing specialist, we have a multifamily specialist, we've got a guy that really focuses on just industrial and land. So we try to do that so that you're just going to have a better focus on that area. If that's what they're doing 100% of the time, then you know all the ins and outs, both from a financial side, you know the players in the game, you know who's interested. And I think if you kind of overwhelm yourself in too many areas, then it gets to be a little bit lost. And one that I know you always hear me talking about is I have the same license as a residential agent, and I would never try to sell my own house or someone else's house. So it's really just kind of staying in your lane really helps kind of excel where you're at. And so that's what SVN's all about focus, all about specialties, and all about collaboration. So
that's awesome. I know you mentioned that you didn't want to be like a saleswoman, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've seen your approach already as you're talking. It's very personable. Mm-hmm. You kind of feel like you're not to say that's not professional, because it's completely mm-hmm. professional, but you feel like you're someone's friend showing them a place, mm-hmm. but you know all about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it doesn't feel like you're like trying to sell them it, even though
exactly.
you are.
Exactly. Well, I always kind of like what I think of like growing up, I really loved puzzles. And I kind of think of it as that way, because it's just kind of finding the perfect niche for someone. And if I know it's not on the market, you know, kind of going into things and finding things that are off market and just keeping track. You know, one of the biggest things in this industry is it takes a lot of time. So, you know, 6 months, a year, even 2 years into it, like you're still learning a ton. You're still learning the active players. You're still, you have to track absolutely everything, because it happens all the time where I'm like, oh, well, you know, I talked to so-and-so 3 years ago and they said they had this requirement. And if I ever saw something come up, you know, it's 3 years later, but I give them a ring and they're like, no way. And it ends up being the perfect fit. So it's definitely like a long-term play, mm-hmm. In a lot of situations, but, I kind of think of it more as like a puzzle piece. And just like you mentioned, no, I'm not trying to sell people on it. Cause even buildings that I'm representing, I've had situations where I can tell the other representative broker for the buyer, prospective buyer is kind of trying to talk them into it, and it's not a good fit. Ultimately, I know it's, you know, I've almost talked people out of it, and it's not doing any disservice to my seller that I'm representing, because I know financially or somewhere down the line, that's absolutely going to fall apart. Whether we even get to a due diligence period, get under contract, it ends up being a lot messier trying to convince someone to, you know, buy a property or something like that that really isn't going to work for them. So there's been situations where I've somewhat talked people out of it, whether I'm representing them or not, just because I know it's not going to end well. You know, I've seen that play out. And so, no, I'm not always just pushing people to make the move, because, you know, it's going to reflect poorly on myself as well. And in the end, no one's going to be happy.
And you talk about the long haul, you know, in Des Moines, when it comes to commercial real estate, and let's just take one topic, you mm-hmm. know, restaurants, one category, mm-hmm. it's not like there's this oodles and oodles of prospects out there. Mm-hmm. And some of the restaurants have very specific criteria that they need in order mm-hmm. to acquire a space. So you are looking at a long haul process. Mm-hmm. You know, what can people expect if they're looking for like commercial real estate in Des Moines at this point?
Mm-hmm. Well, just like you mentioned, it definitely depends on the sector. So if we're going to be focusing on restaurants, the big one since just kind of post-COVID era, everyone's kind of familiar with the rising cost of construction, how much longer it takes now. So a majority of people are looking for that, what's referred to as second generation restaurant space. So Des Moines specifically, we have county requirements and everything for grease trap interceptors and hood, and every city and municipality is going to have their own requirements, but it's very, very costly to install that if it's not already there. So second generation, finding space where it's already been built out for that. Maybe there's even some FF&E furniture, fixtures, and equipment that is left over, and you know the previous tenant's just kind of done with it, whether that maybe they're relocating and they're going to upgrade, or they're just calling it quits altogether. So that's always kind of the ideal situation. But it's very scarce now because everyone's looking for that. And restaurants already run on pretty low profit margins for the most part. So it's definitely hard. We have to do a lot of off-market digging. And it's so that's kind of why you have to know all the active players in the game, because if a restaurant closes, they're not usually announcing it, you know, 2 months before, because they have workers that they still need to employ, and they're usually trying to kind of work it out until the last minute. So it can be tricky, but that's why you always have to be tracking. And like I mentioned, if I'm talking to someone, maybe they say, hey, we're looking to retire, but it's going to be another couple of years. So I'll take note of that. And in a couple of years, if I have a prospect, I'm going to reach back out to them and, you know, see where things are at, whether it's the relocation or, yeah, so it's definitely a tricky market right now, but just like I mentioned, it's kind of putting those puzzle pieces together.
No, I can completely relate to that in the sense that even in marketing, so we deal with a lot of, I would say roughly 50% of my clientele are new businesses that don't yet exist. Like I have people coming in who literally haven't even registered their business yet. They're like, I have an idea. And they come and so we're walking with them through that fine line between marketing consulting and business consulting sometimes. And it sometimes takes, I mean, the pandemic was really slower than normal, but it can take, you know, 6 months, 9 months, a year and a half before someone actually takes the plunge or is actually ready to start doing their, and there's so many factors that come into play. So it's not like I'm looking for that sale right in that moment. Oh, sorry, get out of here. No, it's a journey with them relationally to help them when they're ready. And I think that's one thing I really appreciate about what you do as well.
Yeah, you definitely have to have a lot of patience in the business. Not only are the clients maybe going to take their time, if, you know, just like you mentioned, maybe they don't even have their entity registered yet, or, you know, I like to have resources just like you to help them out and assist them. Hey, you should go to this person. They can help you out with this, you know, funding, grants, banking, marketing, obviously, anything along those lines, and kind of assist them. So it's not wasted time. They're still doing something and moving forward. But yeah, everything is kind of a long-term play. Sometimes people do come to me extremely prepared. I helped a gal out just a couple months ago, and she already had her business plan. She had her financial plan. She already had like her equipment picked out online that she wanted to purchase. Very, very put together. She's very type A, and she was ready to go. And so she was able to kind of jump on it. But for the most part, that usually doesn't happen. So I almost had to double check her work and just kind of make sure. I'm like, wow. I was almost a little taken aback by it. So
it's
a good surprise.
Abnormal.
But exactly. So luckily I have patience because I just kind of understand. But yeah, you gotta have patience. It's definitely the long haul.
Yes, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about location. That's a huge factor of what you do, is understanding what, having a real gauge on the temperature of the communities that might be best suited for their type of business. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So definitely a bunch of different factors in it. You know, if you're talking about trying to, you know, we help people that are already maybe in the metro area and they're trying to determine which city they're in. Maybe they know which city, but they don't know which corridor. We also help people where it's like, you know, maybe a multi-unit franchise and they haven't even entered the state yet. And we're kind of helping them decide, you know, which metro area they should be in. So we really kind of handle everything. So there's a lot of different factors in it, but I mean, we're seeing how important that is. Obviously you always kind of hear that in residential real estate, but people want to find that desirable corridor. And you really got to kind of keep a temperature on what's going on with redevelopments and stay ahead of that, because especially if you're assisting a buyer and you want to get in there, prices are going to skyrocket once announcements are being made. People are aware of redevelopments. But I've had that a lot recently, especially Merle Hay Corridor, where there's these, you know, just very kind of old buildings. Really, it's kind of more of a demo rebuild. But financial institutions, maybe it is like a, you know, a corporate restaurant or something like that, all want to enter this corridor, but it's very saturated, and it has been for a long time. It's an extremely established corridor, an extremely established area. So finding the perfect location and then determining the cost and saying, hey, you know, maybe it even makes more sense for you to, you know, take on a former industrial or flex or office building and do kind of a demo interior and rebuild, but it just totally depends on their budget and financing and everything along those lines. But yeah, location is key. So focusing on that is usually what we kind of try to take out of it, because I think a lot of people, especially if it's like restaurateurs, you know, they'll get really hung up on the aesthetic of one building and think it's so beautiful, but the access is terrible. You know, maybe they're a coffee shop. You know, you're on the go, you're going to pick the easiest option. You know, you want to be able to turn right in, get right out. If you know it's an absolute mess every time you go there, you're just going to opt for another location, because you need to be quick in and out. You know, if you can't turn right at that location, it's median blocked. I mean, I do that myself all the time. So you have to be very strategic about that. So I try to reel everyone back when I first start working with them and kind of start from a high level. We go through demographics. We go through their target, you know, who they're trying to sell to. What makes sense for them? Is this, you know, and we're looking for people after work, drinks, or, you know, on the way to work. We study the traffic routes and everything like that. And I try to really kind of take the emotional aspect out of it when we start. And then we start narrowing in. Okay, you know what? This city makes the most sense for you. This corridor makes the most sense for you. And then we start analyzing our options and putting them side by side. And I try not to ever let someone just focus on one property, because things can always go awry. You know, I usually encourage that we write multiple offers and just kind of see what landlords or sellers are willing to do, because, you know, maybe they say, oh, I would absolutely not sell unless it was for X amount, and that's out of their budget. But I've had that happen where we actually put it to paper and say, well, this is what we can do. It is in paper. So it kind of shows our serious intent. And then it turns out they're a lot more flexible, or the other way around. Sometimes it's disappointing. But that's why we always want to have more than one option. I really kind of try to take it high level and then zone in, because that's one of the biggest things that happens to people is they just see a beautiful brick building and then they focus on it, but they don't realize that the parking is not sufficient and it can't accommodate for, you know, the amount of seats that they want. Usually the city won't even allow it if it's a situation like that, but you really kind of have to take some of the emotion out of it when you're starting off.
And I think also demographics would come to, depending on the type of restaurant or business it is. Let's say it's fine dining, you know, there's certain neighborhoods that just it wouldn't work in.
Right.
You know, whereas places that are like, you mentioned coffee shop, like maybe they need more foot traffic, mm-hmm. you know, and some of the places that are available just have zippo to no foot traffic, mm-hmm. and that's what these kind of businesses rely on. Mm-hmm. I think that's always really interesting on my end too, because as we do consumer psychology for marketing, mm-hmm. I've seen that kind of work directly with real estate too, in that you have to think about what would the average person in this community want,
right,
for this kind of restaurant, and would it work?
Yeah, put yourself in their shoes.
Uh-huh. 100%. 100%. So what are some common things that you look at beyond location, but when it comes to the interior or the exterior, mm-hmm. of a structure or building, mm-hmm. That are like on your mental checklist?
Mm-hmm. So the obvious is kind of just the general structural, you know, how old is the building? Is it in good condition? You want to look at the bones first, especially if it's an acquisition. I do typically look at things a little bit different with an acquisition versus a lease. If you are leasing and it's a good reputable landlord, maybe it is an older building, but they're going to be responsible for the structure, for the roof, anything like that. Once again, it does depend on the landlord and how reputable they are, because sometimes even if that's their responsibility, that can be a fight. So that's another important factor. But if they're acquiring, just like I mentioned, maybe it is kind of a remodel. Maybe it's a complete change in use. So I guess a big one is cost. You know, we go over their budget. I make sure that they have some form of contact with a general contractor so that we can give an idea of pricing. What does it look like ground up? What does it look like to completely change the use? If it was like an office space, to do kind of a interior demo and rebuild, what does it look like? If it's mostly turnkey, but you're really kind of adjusting it specifically for your use, if you were previously, you know, it was previously a coffee shop and now you're going to be a pizza joint, there's obviously some nuances and some differences that you need, and seating arrangement and kitchen layout and everything like that. So numbers is one of the most important. And once again, just like the location, I try to take that high level with people and make sure that they're aware of those numbers before getting emotionally invested in something and then going, oh, wow, okay, well, that was double what we expected it to be, especially in today's climate, because it's really shocking. We have had people where they were dead set on building a building and that was what they thought they were going to do. And then they got the numbers and they said, okay, it looks like we're going to lease. You know, that makes a lot more sense for us. You know, and so maybe we'll look at opportunities for them where they lease with an option to buy at some point, you know, kind of be familiar with the ownership status. Maybe it's pretty turnkey, and so they don't have to dump a ton of money into it. And then when they are ready to buy, they'd be able to go out and find that. So lots of factors, but I mean, budget, location, obviously the demographics are absolutely huge, and ease of access. It depends on the use, but visibility is usually pretty important for a retailer.
And so a couple weeks ago, without naming names at mm-hmm. all or mm-hmm. whatever, we went into a space, and it was for a restaurant that needed like a lot of stuff, but right. The location of this place was perfect. Mm-hmm. The aesthetics was like, they had minimal work they had to do, but then in the kitchen space was the right size, mm-hmm. and all they could do was do induction cooking. Mm-hmm. And this kind of, it was an Asian restaurant, so there was no way they could do it.
Yeah, they would have to completely change the menu. It wouldn't make sense for their use. If maybe it was just getting rid of one menu item or something, it would make sense. But if you're completely trying to restructure, in that sense, it doesn't make sense. And luckily, you know, they were realistic about that. You know, they tried
trying.
To think about,
they're like, it's such a perfect
place. Yeah. The wheels were turning and we were kind of trying to think if there was alternative options. You know, we talked to the building owner, the general contractor that had done the last build out to determine if there was some feasible way, you know, hey, if we're not dumping a bunch of money into a build out, maybe we can figure out this one issue and put some money into that. But ultimately it ended up being something that was kind of out of our control. So luckily the clients, you know, they're aware of that and they're understanding, and they didn't mm-hmm. try to completely force it, but
when it came down to, if I recall, it was the building itself wouldn't allow it that change from induction mm-hmm. to anything with an open flame, mm-hmm. and it's like, well, then there's no option.
Yeah exactly. So
wow, it's crazy how many factors mm-hmm. need to be considered. So what is the thing that, you know, everybody has the thing, right, that mm-hmm. you get up every morning and it's the thing that keeps you going, the thing that you're looking forward to, the thing that gives you the spice of life, mm-hmm. you know, and so what is that for you in your industry?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of ups and downs, and I would say every single day there's like four different points where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so frustrating, and then, oh, this is so exciting, and I think a lot of times it's kind of that aha moment, or whether that's for a client and really helping them kind of visualize it, or just like I mentioned, kind of finding that missing puzzle piece, like, hey, I know this will work, I really got to keep this in mind and working on it and trying to determine, and then all of a sudden, hey, actually this is the perfect fit. So those like give me a total just rush. I get really excited. I would say kind of the initial matchup with people gets me more excited than like closing the deal. To me, that's almost the least exciting. Of course, it's great. You know, that's the only way I make money, the only way I can survive.
I don't care about that part,
It's more kind of the initial matchup when I just know it's going to be a good fit. I'm like, oh, I've been trying to determine this or figure this out forever. And it's, especially if it's something really unique and just kind of, you know, a specialty use or something like that, and just going, man, I thought of it. And so the aha moment, whether it's for me or whether it's for the client, that's what really kind of gives me that rush. And I'd say that's what I look forward to. That's what I try to achieve at least, you know, a couple times a day, just have a couple of those moments. 'Cause no matter how many setbacks you have and how many frustrating conversations or anything like that, I think that kind of ends up outweighing it all at the end. So that's kind of what keeps me going.
What did you guys do through the pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always think about this for every industry mm-hmm. out there, because everybody had to adapt in some mm-hmm. way, or everybody's industry was affected in some way, maybe mm-hmm. except for like Zoom like thrived, but you
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Well, I'd say the one positive was a lot of people were a lot more willing to have conversations, just kind of completely open up and be vulnerable about their situations. Pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, a lot of people were more open, whether it was an investor that had a tenant and kind of voicing those concerns, a tenant, a landlord, you know, an owner that just said, hey, you know, maybe it makes more sense for a sale leaseback. We're struggling. We need immediate cash flow. So a lot of different situations. questions, but I mean, it was definitely painful. I had a lot of conversations. I took a ton of notes, and it's helpful for me now because people that I talked to, you know, 2 years ago and took really detailed notes of what they need and what their thoughts were and touch base with them today, I'm still working with them now. So just like I mentioned, you know, it's a year or two later, and so that's kind of why you got to keep track of those. But it wasn't a ton of movement. I'd say more the industrial sectors were a little bit more positive. Those were some definite things. Professional medical was still very important because, with the exception of, you know, a couple weeks when absolutely everything was shut down, people still need, you know, if you have a cavity or something like that, or, you know, you still need, to get glasses, you still need to get your teeth cleaned there. Of course the emergency medical uses are always going to be there. So those were the ones that were kind of a constant, like, hey, no matter what the outcome of this is, people will always need this. But people like the restaurateurs, that was really up in the air. People were dead set on it beforehand, and they're like, well, you know, this completely changes our concept. You know, we're really focused on dine-in and, you know, lots of seating or something like that. So a lot of people push the pause button. And, you know, I'm kind of glad they did, because imagine opening up during that time, you know, they already run on such low profit margins. It'd be painful. But some people found opportunity in that, said, hey, you know, I've always been looking for office space, and I know that we're going to bounce back, or no matter what, you know, work from home, I think maybe made some people realize, we're hearing of, you know, younger people, usually they're single, maybe have a pet at home and they want to stay home more, and now they want work from home. But a lot of the families realized, I can't work with my three kiddos running around screaming, and, you know, I can't focus, or, you know, they're interrupting the Zooms and the calls, and you just can't differentiate. Or
that even was me. Yeah. I have four kids, four cats, two doves, fish tank full of fish. You know, it's fun.
Doves.
Yeah, we do. They're a dumpling. It was a dumpling and wonton. I can't remember anymore. Gosh. But in our cats are, yeah, it doesn't
too
matter.
Too many to keep too track of.
Too many to keep track of.
Yeah. So obviously that's a completely different environment. You know, if you have extreme focus, that is great. But for the most part, people don't. Mm-hmm. So just having an area of separation, I'd say a lot of the smaller offices ended up getting taken up, because even if their office was closed, you know, they realized, okay, it was maybe great at first, but yeah. I can't get any work done. Even for me, I spent a little bit of time at home, and I don't have any pets, unfortunately.
Yes.
I don't have any children or anything.
That was a
like
little
that.
Shout out, yeah. to Ryan.
So, you know, no responsibility, but I still found myself just feeling like I needed to do the laundry and I'd be cleaning and all this kind of stuff. Or even I couldn't break myself away from work. You know, I couldn't. My home was the office, so I never stopped working. I'd feel guilty if an email came through.
Yeah.
So, you know, people did still find importance and take an opportunity in getting an office space, and just kind of the various uses. But a lot of the retail stuff, you know, we definitely saw some turnover there. Very unfortunately with restaurants, maybe some of them were kind of already struggling and they're like, this is the final straw. And then, you know, it gave opportunity to new people. But for the most part, it was pretty slow in terms of people actually pulling the trigger, but there was still a lot of interest, still a ton of people looking, but just with the uncertainty, people weren't sure if they should pull the trigger. Yeah. And like I mentioned, I don't push anyone to do that if they're not ready. So I just say, I'm here for you when you're ready. I'm going to present you with options. We can go through that. If you end up feeling comfortable with it, you know, we'll go through all the notions, make sure you're set up in all the other areas, you know, grants, financing, marketing, make sure that we have some alternatives for you. If you need to kind of change your strategy or your approach during this time, but I'm still going to present you with opportunities and just kind of see when the right time is. And for the most part, I think a lot of it has been this past year since I was completely opened back up. I'm grateful for that. You know, I think our businesses were able to bounce back some of the fastest because we were able to open up faster than, you know, places like New York or, you know, any of those primary markets where they're super, super densely populated. So I've been having an absolute ton of activity now. People that I've been talking to for years are finally ready to pull the trigger, especially because things are flying off the shelf. So every other broker is having the same thing. So we're like, hey, you know, I'm not doing a sales pitch by telling you it's going to be gone in a week, but it's going to be gone in a week.
Well, and it is. And Des Moines is growing like exponentially. And there's new people moving in. I mean, I'm a prime example. I've only been here 2 years. I moved here, started a business. I know so many other people who moved here and started a business because it's a really great place to start a business. Mm-hmm. And yet that limits the market a little bit, right?
Yeah, I'm a transplant as well. Not from too far away, but yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people come here for job opportunities or, you know, obviously the income and especially the cost of living is very competitive. So maybe people come here short term and then kind of end up staying. But, you know, not only are our residents seeing that, but investors are seeing that. So I have never seen it. It's so hard to find investment properties. You know, just whether it's our tax laws, everything is kind of different here. And so a lot of people are seeing that opportunity, lower overall price than just like I mentioned, the primary markets, if you're looking somewhere, like Chicago, New York, California, something like that. So a lot of those investors coming from the coasts and those primary markets are looking for opportunities here as well. So investors, your owner user, your new operators, and then the existing ones, there is a ton of activity. So we're just seeing less and less product available since the cost of construction's gone up. The time of delivery has been extended so dramatically. So it's very interesting. You know, I know in 10 years from now, we'll for sure be talking about it, just like people talk about 08 and everything. But just making sure that you can adapt and, you know, that's strategize. There's always going to be some adaptation, not just in this business, but in pretty much every business.
Every business. So. And I think the pandemic showed us that anything can happen.
Yes, yes.
So
the unexpected.
If you are looking for... If you have a business, you're looking for some amazing real estate to, to rent or to buy, Nora is your person. We have her contact info in the description box as well as SVN Creates, and you can reach out to her at any point, and I'm sure she'll be happy to help you right away.
Absolutely.
Nora, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We really appreciate it, and I look forward to our ongoing ventures together.
Yes, continued relationship. Very excited.
Absolutely. And for all those who are listening, until next time.